and welcome to episode 15 of the Enthusiasticast. I'm John, he's Mark, and this is the webcast where each week one of us recommends an awesome book. This week, I'm going to be talking about the bloody cult favorite Battle Royale, but before we get to that, let's talk about the New Yorker's picks for the top 20 under 40. This year, the New Yorker's summer fiction issue features 20 writers under the age of 40 who they think capture the sound and feel of the best modern writing. This issue was inspired by a 1999 issue entitled The Future of American Fiction, and in that issue, they added some plaudits to already established superstars like Michael Chabon and David Foster Wallace. But they also called the ball on nascent talents like Juno Diaz and Jonathan Franzen. So, Mark, three questions to you. Who do you think are the heavyweights in this new list? Who do you think is going to blow up big? And most importantly, who do you think got snubbed?
Right. List making. Fun, fun, fun.
List making is fun. They make these lists so that people like us will look at their list and judge their list and talk about their list.
That's true, but it also reveals my lack of literary chops, right?
Fucking tell me about it. I didn't recognize barely anybody on this list. It's I was like, man, have I crawled so far up the asshole of genre and comic books that I've just completely divorced from literary fiction?
Well, you know, it's the New Yorker, so they can play the elitist card all they want, right?
Right. It seemed pretty elite. Like, I'm pretty sure back in 1999 I would have recognized David Foster Wallace and Michael Chabon, but I didn't see anybody of that caliber on the list. Did you?
Yeah. So, like, their criteria is a little wishy-washy too, right? And it's just like, okay, you know, you've heard of these guys. They're your friends. They're like, you know, the roommates of the guy that works down the hall. Like, how did they find these people? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I've only read two of the authors on the list. And I guess that's kind of the point, right?
Like, they're trying to...
Right. So
no, fair enough. I expect on a list like this that, you know, some of them are going to be unknowns or up and comers, people who've maybe had, you know, one novel that won some small awards or a short story collection or something, but not much. So, you know, the kind of people where you don't feel bad that you don't know them.
Right. And there's, in my case, a lot of those people. So the heavyweights, I guess, Saffron Foer.
That was the one.
Is a big wheel, right? And, I kind of think that Nicole Krauss, his wife, is going to be a bigger deal than him, like,
okay,
in the long run. I think that Gary Steingart is probably the one that's going to explode and that we're going to...
He's got a new book coming up, right?
Yeah, he's got a new one coming out this year, but that's going to be his third novel, and... I first heard of him back in 2003 when he did the Russian Debutante's Handbook. And when I was in retail, that kind of was like a mini sensation at the time. So I bought that and it's on my shelf. I haven't read it. And then, yeah, this is really a conversation about books that I haven't read. So Rivka Galchin and Nell... Freudenberger, I guess.
Okay. Freudenberger.
They're also kind of likely good bets that are going to be big or, you know, are going to be bestseller, like, are going to be, I don't know, literary superstars or just like Oprah Book of the Month clubs or whatever, but they're around. The one Canadian on the list, Bez Mozgis, he, other than Saffron Foer, is the other author that I've read. And so I'm like, okay, maybe, right? Like, I don't have... So he's a good writer. The Natasha and Other Stories, the collection of short stories that I read, is well written. I just don't know if he's got the story chops. And I say that just because I've seen the movie that he directed, and I hated it.
Okay.
So he's, you know, he's packing off to Brooklyn and he's going to live there with his wife for the next couple of years. And he's going to obviously come out with the novel that he's been working on.
Right.
Since Natasha.
Maybe he's just a bad filmmaker. You know, in the same way that great actors release, you know, really bad albums all the time.
Yeah. Fair enough. Like, I'll give you, that's totally possible. Right. And so he's, I don't know, but I think there's story problems there. I think there's story problems well, let's just say the story isn't the strong suit of the short story collection. So we'll see.
I don't know if story is the strong point of this list, though, either. So
that's true. That's true. So Besmosgus, Canadian, Toronto, go yeah. The rest of the list, I don't know. You know.
Yeah. So who did you think was there anybody that you didn't see on the list that you if you were making this list you would have put on there?
Well, okay. This is literally the story of my bookshelf of unread books, right? So I went down that list. I went down that shelf and looked at all like the people that I've purchased that I've intended to buy, and then I had to kind of like look them up to see if they're eligible. So
right.
Dave Eggers, it says in the story, turned 40, Ed Park, Ben Marcus, Ben Greenman, Jess Walter, who we've talked about on the show.
Yeah.
All ineligible.
Right.
You know, Sheila Hetty, Stephen Galloway are Canadian, so I don't know if Besmosgus makes the list, if that's fair or not.
Is there Canadian? Sure. There was very much that, you know, there's 10 women and 10 men. There's a diversity of ethnic background. So one Canadian probably fills that quota.
Right. And then I was just like, okay, this is kind of the usual suspects. Like, these are the guys that show up in the lit mags that, you know, they're probably all friends, or they probably all know how to, you know, they probably all have each other's email addresses kind of thing, right? Like,
right.
It seems that clubby. So in thinking outside the club, I was just like, well, there's this guy, Tao Lin, and he's like, he's a millennial, and he runs outside that whole thing. He's published, he's self-published, and he's kind of like the, kind of the post bookstore lit superstar. Like he's next gen, I think. So I'm watching him to kind of like blow up, because he's just like, I don't need you fucking publishers. I don't need you fucking lit mags. Like, I'm publishing direct to the interwebs. Right. And so I think he's going to be big in his own way, but he probably won't be recognized in the same way that Jonathan Franzen would be, you know?
Yeah.
And then the other person I thought of was Maud Newton. And Maud Newton is a lit blogger I follow her on Twitter. I have no idea if she qualifies by age, right? Like, I couldn't. I have no idea. Like, and I wouldn't dare ask if she. Are you 40 or under? Because, anyway. So I've got I've got another kind of couple no-shows, but. I don't know. Who do you say is missing?
My first thought was Dan Sean, but he turns out he's 46.
Right.
So, and it's funny because I read Await Your Reply, and that read like a young man's book to me. I was very surprised to find out that he's 46. So my vote defaults to Max Brooks, because that list needed some zombies. And he's 38.
Now,
and actually, you know what? It's funny. I got to say, like, initially when I was looking through that list, I had only read one. Like, I haven't read Saffron Foer. He just doesn't – maybe it's good, but just something about his whole aura just doesn't appeal to me.
He's come on.
So,
I've said that on the show before, and it's, like, totally unwarranted, but I'm just like – dude, man, no, I think your wife is, like, way cooler than you, and like, you're getting all the love, but, it, like, 20 years from now, people are gonna look back and be like, it's all poserdom, really.
Yeah, it feels like that. So, I've read Joshua Ferris, and I was enthusiastic about his first book, Then We Came to the End, and there's an unreleased Enthusiasticast somewhere where I go on about that. But his second book, his sophomore effort, didn't quite get the critical love. But I think he's a guy who could come back with a really – like I think he just, you know, sophomore slump. I think he's going to come back with a really strong third book. But that was it for me and this list. So I actually read the short story collection of one of the authors on the list, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. I probably hashed that up.
So
but
you made it a destination, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I was like, I'm gonna
totally
I'm
showing gonna be, me up.
Fucker. What's that? No. I had an audiobook credit, and I was just like, yeah, I'm gonna pick one of these people on this list. I'm gonna see what they're about. I picked her because she was alphabetically first. So I read her short story collection called "The Thing Around Your Neck." Really good, really strong. She's a Nigerian writer, and so. Not all stories set in Nigeria, but characters, you know, from Nigeria. Some like have moved to America. Some have moved back. Some have, I guess, there was like the Biafran revolution. So they, you know, they left during that, and then they've come home. They're different ages, different genders. Just really, really, really strong, strong short stories. Really well observed. Really well written, and really different than a lot of what I've read recently. Right. So on the basis of that, sorry.
Sorry, like just a good palate cleanser to dip into some short fiction or whatever and just be like, whoa.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't know if you'd want to do them all at a run. I think, you know, like one or two and then, you know, come back and do another one. She's actually got two novels published, the second of which, Half of the Yellow Sun. I think it's called Half of the Yellow Sun. I think I'm going to make that a destination. I'm going to check it out.
No way.
So, you know, on the basis of the 10% of this list that I've now, well, how many people is it? It's 20 people. I've read two, 10%. You know, I think there might be something to this list.
Well, so. Benjamin Kunkel, who wrote Indecision. I've got that here beside me. He's one of the contributors to one of the Lit Mags in New York with his buddy, Keith Gessen, who I also own. John Ray, who wrote Low Boy, that had lots of publicity, great internet publicity last year. Joe Mino, I also own. Those are guys that, you know, I'm responding to their publisher's response for publicity, right? Like they're building them up as nest egg things, and I obviously bought in. Their marketing worked, right? Like I got their books. But they're not on the list. And then I poked over to the Granta 2007 list. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, it's got lots of crossover, actually. Like
really?
Yeah. So Granta has done this twice as well. And I don't know if they'll do it a third time because the American editor of Granta left them. But there's the guy that wrote the... Beast of No Nation. Did you see that?
No.
And anyway, so yeah, there's crossover, and then
okay. Well, that's kind of that's kind of good to have the double endorsement.
Pardon me?
It's kind of good to have the double endorsement, right? The you know, they're showing up on one list or showing up on another. It kind of it's either you know this is a small click and we're just going to keep talking about each other until somebody listens, or it's you know outside confirmation that you know there's something there.
Absolutely. Okay, so speaking of books that I own that I haven't read.
That you then loaned to me and I read them.
I'm going to outsource my readings from now on. I gave you this.
I'm just your sweatshop reading monkey.
Your reaction, sir. Go for it. What do you have to say?
Well, Jesus, I wish that I hadn't got this book from you, and I'll tell you why. Because this is like a qualified – I'm actually going to end up recommending – an edition of this book that I haven't read. So the book is Battle Royale. It's by Kushin Takami. And I'm going to be saying all of the Japanese names phonetically. So I apologize to anybody who's fluent in Japanese. I'm probably hashing them up. So it's this book. It was published in 1999. So far, it's the only book this guy's ever written. It was fairly controversial when it came out. And the basic plot is that it is an alternate timeline Japan, and they call it successful fascism. It's a fascist state, and in this fascist state, there is this game called the program where every year they take 50 grade 9 classes, 15-year-olds, and they put them into this game, one class at a time, and the whole idea of the game is that the class has 3 days to kill each other. And there can only be one survivor, one winner to the game. If everybody's not dead by the end of the 3 days, then everybody dies. So that's the incentive to, you know, to get out there and kill people. And it's, I love this kind of story. Like, I love, you know, gladiator stories. I love The Most Dangerous Game. You know, going back, I love The Running Man, not the Schwarzenegger version, but the original novella by Stephen King, writing as Richard Bachman, was like a great Most Dangerous Game kind of story. You know, gladiator movies. There's a new like YA fiction out right now called The Hunger Games, which is the same sort of thing and is really good. So I just like the intensity of these stories, and I love the fact that it just instantly on a plot level marries action to emotion. So that's me going into this book, right? So we saw this in a bookstore, and I mentioned that I was interested in reading it, and you're like, fuck, dude, I've got that, and you gave it to me. So what you gave me was the first edition of the English translation from Viz Media.
Which, and I probably bought in 1999.
Well, no, I think it was like 2000. Well, here, I've got the book right here. I can find out. But anyway, it's like 2003 or something like that, right?
Right. I bought the first English language edition.
First English language edition. And it's not a great translation. That's the problem with it. It's not well translated. I remember listening to a translator talk about what he does at one point, and he said, you know, I don't just translate the words into English. I try to write the book as – I try to write what I think that the author would have written if the author had been writing in English. And I think that is like the essence of a good translation. This is very much more of the school of – transliteration, where it's
dude,
just
how
it's
long
just,
did it take you to figure that out?
It's at the beginning it almost seemed like a stylistic choice, but then as I was going through, there's you know, there's preposition problems, there's tense problems, there's you know, punctuation, there's it's not copy edited very well, so there's it became clear that it wasn't a stylistic choice. It was just that the translation was just not at a top level. So the content, though, is really, really compelling, and it hits all of the buttons that I wanted to hit. So I read the book, and I completely enjoyed the book. But there is a new edition, and we'll link to the new edition in the show notes, and the new edition is a line-by-line re-edit of the original. So all of the translation problems, apparently, based on my reading, have been fixed in the new edition. So on that basis, I'm totally recommending it.
Oh, dude. So that's so it's like.
So no,
like
I mean,
halfway
it worked
through,
out.
Maybe you should have given it back to me, and we should have tried to hook you
up. No. I was like, you know, I was into it, and it, you know, it all worked out. It was all good. The funny thing was is that my translation woes did not end there, because so I read the book and I was, you know, I was on the fence about recommending it because of the translation. And of course, so this was a huge sensation in Japan upon its release. It was very controversial. It was originally submitted as part of a literary competition. It was then disqualified from the competition based on the content. Like, it's incredibly violent. And but then went on to become this huge publishing success. They made a movie based on it, and it was also adapted into a manga, a Japanese comic book. The author of the book wrote the manga, and so then there was a sequel to the manga. Sorry, there was a movie based on the novel. There was a manga based on the novel. Then there was a sequel to the movie. Then there was a manga based on the sequel, the movie sequel. So there's two movies and two mangas, but only one book. And the author has actually come out and said that he feels that the manga is the truer representation of the material. But apparently it's a, you know, there's a lot more graphic violence and a lot more sex in the manga. The translation problem comes up again because the English translation released in North America by Tokyopop, the English translation was done by a guy named Keith Giffen, who is a well-known North American comics writer and artist. And apparently the editors at Tokyopop sort of gave him the go-ahead to kind of put his own stamp on it, hoping to gin up interest based on his name in addition to the interest surrounding the original property. Well, apparently he rewrote it so that he actually changed the plot in the text. So now there's all kinds of plot holes in the book based on the rewritten script that he did for it.
That sounds like the stupidest thing ever.
Yes. No, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's been a huge sales juggernaut. So, you know, I guess one could argue that from a financial point, from an artistic point, it doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And apparently a lot of people are not, this is again, based on reviews I've read, a lot of people are not crazy about that adaptation. So I don't, even though I've got, you know, the Japanese author saying the manga is the way to go, I don't want to go to the manga because it's apparently like it's a flawed, broken piece of technology.
Okay, but dude, the novel is like 400 pages long. How do you do that in manga reasonably? It's,
I think there's 20 volumes.
Holy hell, okay.
Yeah, well, that's I mean, that's the, they love, like, it's actually 600 pages long, but they love that in manga, right? They're like, run forever. That's great. Huh. Bring it on. So the movies are nothing to do with the author, but apparently it's a, the movie is directed by Kinji Fukasaku, who was an older...
Nice pronunciation. Very well.
Thank you. He's an older director. He's passed away now. But it's a very youth-oriented film. So, and the movie was a huge youth or like a cult teen hit. Not even a cult hit. It was like a huge hit with teenagers in Japan when it was released.
So translation and, problems there?
So I ran into problems there. This is like – it started to become kind of epic. So I – after reading the book and sort of being qualified enthusiasm for it, I thought, you know what? Why don't I watch the movie and hopefully it'll be better translation on the movie and that'll give me a better sense of like of really how I feel about it, right? So really good movie. Really enjoyable. Highly recommend that as well. I think I would recommend the book over the movie, and definitely the cleaned up version of the cleaned up text version of the book over the movie. So while I'm watching the movie, though, I'm like, you know what? This translation is not very good either. It's like it's all every time the letter I was used, it was a capital I. Like whoever translated it thought that in English, whenever you use an I, it's capitalized. So like in the middle of a word, like tin, it would be lowercase t, capital I, lowercase n. And then the apostrophe would be in the wrong place in words like C-A apostrophe N-T. And again, there was like preposition problems. And then there was a weird requiem at the end of the movie, kind of like an epilogue, where suddenly it stopped making sense. Like the English stopped making sense. It became like babblefish, like somebody had just typed in the Japanese and it's whatever it came out, that's what they put on the screen. And it was really weird. And I couldn't figure it out until I went to watch the special features, and there was no English subtitles. It was just Korean. And at that point, I realized, fuck, the store has rented me the Korean special edition, which also happens to have English subtitles on the main movie. But they were obviously done by like a Korean national who happens to speak Japanese and English. So it's like, fucking no end. But you know what? I read this book and then I watched the movie right afterwards and I still enjoyed the movie even though I just read the book. And it is a surprisingly faithful movie adaptation, and I would totally recommend both.
Cool. Okay, so a comment and then a question. So Quentin Tarantino's top 20 favorite films. This is like number 4 or something.
Yeah, and this was like his favorite film released in a certain year or since a certain year or whatever. Yeah, he's big on this movie.
Right, yeah, Dave, favorite film of the 2000s, probably, right?
Yeah.
And so it's on my list for that reason, and so kind of disappointed to hear that it doesn't work, but maybe if you just track down the Super Criterion Edition or something.
Yeah, I'm sure there's, you know, I'm sure it's not only the Korean special edition out there to be had. I'm pretty sure there's one with a proper translation. And it's not horrible. The translation for most of the film is fine, right? It just has a couple of like, you know, there's a missing word here and there, or a preposition thing or something. Enough for you to go, okay, this is not the utmost quality, but it doesn't really slow you down.
Okay.
It's only in like the last minute of the film that suddenly you're like, that doesn't even make sense.
They broke and went and got lunch, right?
All your base are mine.
So my question, I guess, is, Lord of the Flies is a short novel, really short. This is 600 pages. What is he doing new?
Well, it's basically, there's a ton going on. First of all, there's 41 students, and you get a little bit about each one of those 41 students. So it doesn't gloss over anything. And there's a number of different plots going on. It's constantly building things up and then undercutting them. So you never know entirely what kind of book it's going to be. There's politics in it, there's social psychology, and you're following several groups of characters all through it. So does it do anything new? Yeah, I think it does, because I think it narrows down on a certain kind of problem in Lord of the Flies is more just a general look at the underpinnings of of society, whereas this is because it's boys and girls, it really brings into it how difficult it is to trust and how important trust is. Like, it really narrows down on that, on that one concept, and then, what are the experiences that allow us to trust, and what will those experiences stand up to?
Cool. All right. Sorry for putting you on the spot.
No, it's cool. It's cool.
Well, just like, I guess Hunger Games is three novels too, right? So.
But that has a whole action plot going on, right? That this that has a larger action plot, I should say.
Right.
Just right. It's not all the game.
My exposure to this plot line is, can be handled in a condensed form, like a 2-hour movie. So I was just like, well. Okay. Cool. Should we wrap it up there?
I think so.
Anything more to say about Battle Royale?
Oh, you know what? The only thing I do want to say is that I think everybody should go at least and look at the cover to the earlier, less well-translated edition, because I really, really fucking love the design element on that cover. I don't know if you noticed this on your edition, but it's a silhouette of a male student and a female student standing side by side, and the negative space between the two of them forms the silhouette of a rifle. It's really, really, really subtly done, but it's really clever. I really like it. The rest of the cover, it looks like an advanced reader copy. It's not a great cover design in that sense, but that one graphic image of the two silhouettes forming the third silhouette is genius. And they've tried to replicate it on the revised cover for the newer edition and totally taken all the subtlety out of it, and I really dislike it for that, although I'm sure the contents of that edition are much better.
Cool. I will, if I can find the original cover, I'll put it in the show notes.
Excellent.
So those show notes can be found at enthusiasticcast.com. That's where we blog and we talk about other things, including movies and television and just general pop culture goodness that we encounter on a day-to-day basis. You can subscribe to the podcast through the blog there just by clicking on the RSS feed in the bottom right-hand corner. You'll get both the show notes and the blog posts and the audio. We haven't separated just the audio out on its own just yet, but we will. I think that's all I have to say. So I'm Mark, he's John, and thanks for listening.
Cheers.